Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Solari Report. This is Money and Markets with John Titus and Catherine Austin Fitz. We are recording on February 14th for publication on Thursday, February 15th. And our theme today, John, is unusual.
It is. It's a happy thing. Happy Valentine's Day. That's the theme. Keeping it simple.
Yeah. I have been amazed. I cannot tell you how many people I know who are going to Valentine's Day parties. And I've purchased three Valentine cards to give out this week. So I can tell we all need, I don't know, I think we all need an infusion of love and positive energy.
Boy, you said a mouthful there. That's exactly right. I'm not sure we can deliver on that this week.
Well, I don't know.
We can cut back on the darkness a little bit. I think that's fair.
Well, I have to tell you, our pushback story to me is one of the most hopeful things I've seen all year. So yeah. it comes at the end. So hold on.
It's the Bats cleanup and pushback. It's a video.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it, to me, it's a heart warmer. The topic is dark, but it's a heart warmer.
It's a heart warmer, and there's an interesting shift in menu items. Let's just broadly say that.
Okay, well, we'll let you know when we get to pushback. Okay, so let's go.
Okay, let's get it. So this week we have no stories on Gaza, which immediately lightens the mood because there's the genocide going on in Gaza.
Right.
So this week we'll go straight to Ukraine, war in Ukraine, where we have one story. And there's a mix, been a shift there too. A shakeup is underway right now. And so we'll turn to Simplicius and look at what he has to say. We've had him on before, very thoughtful writer. And here is what he has to say on what's happened in Ukraine. Zeluzhny finally dismissed as chaos reigns in Ukraine. It finally happened. Zelensky has let Zeluzhny go. That's the top general, replacing him with Syrsky. So what's going on here? Well, as an initial matter, following, I'm going to punch in a little bit on this guy. You can see it better. Following this news, a meltdown of epic proportions has ensued in the Ukrainian commentariat, really meaning mainstream media. The top names and influencers are not taking this news well. Why not? Well, because many believe Syrsky is hated by the Ukrainian troops, particularly those in the front lines. And then Simplicius gives a series of quotes. People that served under him in Bakhmut seem to hate him. Units hate him the most, disrespected by the troops. He is hated by soldiers and on, widely disliked in the army. So what's going on here? I'm just going to summarizing this, what Simplicius says. He says, ask yourself, why would Zelensky appoint a commander that the entire armed forces allegedly hates? Because they really love Zeluzhny. Simplicius says, this is a design feature, not a bug. This is no accident. Zelensky needs a commander-in-chief he can control, someone not universally loved by the troops, someone who cannot use those troops at a time of opportunity and oust Zelensky from his citadel. Syrsky appears to fit the billet, undefiant, unpopular, uncharismatic, and most importantly, untempted by political ambitions, the ideal subservient factotum to Zelensky's regime.
He also sounds like somebody who'll send the soldiers to slaughter.
That's what he's saying. He'll do what he's told.
Right.
He's subservient. Right.
And we just saw an announcement that the package got through the Senate yesterday.
Yeah, but you remember, spending bills originate in the House. I don't know what the Senate's doing. The House has made it clear. Listen, no border deal. What are you doing?
Right.
That's a no border deal is an automatic DQ.
Right.
So the Senate, I think this is just CYA for the Senate, just saying, oh, well, we tried, we weren't party to this. It was those bad House Republicans. It's just that act by the Senate acting unilaterally like that is just an exercise of futility.
But I'll bet you wherever that money is scheduled to go, the ducks are squawking.
What do you mean? Explain
that. I used to have a partner on Wall Street who would say, the ducks are squawking, I must feed them. And we have an economy that's very dependent on fiscal stimulus. And all the people who need that fiscal stimulus, I'll bet you are squawking.
Okay, so let's say $90 billion goes somewhere. Who gets it? Raytheon?
I think it's the defense establishment, but I also think a lot of it goes to the big tech firms.
Yeah.
So it's going to be big. And remember, the big tech is driving the market. So the market's down 500 points yesterday. And, you know, miraculously, the Senate says, okay, we're good for another $100 billion. So there's probably a connection.
Yeah, probably. You said big tech is driving the market. We will see that loud and clear this week, too.
Right, right. It's not driving the economy. It's destroying the economy. But it's driving the market. The windows between the stock market and the economy are getting stronger and stronger.
It's destroying the economy, but it is strengthening the control grid.
Right.
Yeah. We'll get to that in a minute. But so we've seen, okay, Ukraine, we're done with that. There's a big shakeup going on in Ukraine. There's also a big shakeup going on, evidently, in the U.S. And that brings us to FedWatch and our top story, which is Biden and the special counsel's report. Wow. Wow. I'm going to play a couple clips from the press conference. This is an absolute disaster. I don't know whose idea this was to let Biden do this, but what comes across in this, I mean, aside from Biden's age, he's just way past his expiration date, is his ego. His ego is going to be his downfall. And you can see that in this clip. He just takes the bait and it leads directly to his ruination. Let's just go. There's two clips. I've separated it, so it's not so long. The reporter asking the question, the first clip is Peter Doocy. I'll point him out when the time comes. But let's just take a look at this. Okay.
I'm well-meaning and I'm an elderly man and I know what the hell I'm doing. I've been president and I put this country back on its feet. I don't need his recommendation. It's totally on
his your memory. And can you continue as president?
My memory is so bad, I let you speak. That's
Doocy there. And you can see when Biden says, my memory is so bad, I let you speak, Doocy's like, you know, what are you talking about? That's your comeback? And he gets a smattering laugh. That's pathetic.
This is why I never watched the back and forth at the I just think it's irrelevant to the governance of the country, unfortunately.
To the day-to-day governance, it probably is. But there's a tectonic shift that's going on.
Yeah.
And you're really going to see it on the next clip.
The Democrats are ready to push Biden out.
They're ready to push Biden out. And because the press for 3 years has been totally deferential to Biden. Now that ship sailed. Watch. This is just like this guy's getting thrown to the wolves. Right. But notice Biden's his egoism in the first clip. I put this country back on its feet. and I let you speak like you're a dictator. I let you speak.
But you get this signal everywhere you go that the U.S. establishment is not competent.
Yeah.
I mean, unfortunately, that's the signal. And that's the problem with the federal credit. When the federal credit, you know, has allowed incompetence to reign, but continues to deliver the money and the control. And so that's part of the downward spiral that we're in. And it ain't over.
No, it's not. But watch, one guy who's not, who doesn't lack confidence is Biden. And this works to his disadvantage. Here, the next clip, he wraps up the press conference and says, they didn't charge me, I'm done. And he starts to walk out. But the reporters start answering questions, and he can't resist. He can't help himself. Watch this. This kills him.
And the fact is, they made a firm conclusion. I did not break the law. Period. Thank you all very, very much.
Whoops.
The hostage negotiation. Look. I'm of the view, as you know, that the conduct of the response in Gaza, in the Gaza Strip, has been over the top. I think that, as you know, initially, the president of Mexico, Sisi, did not want to open up the gate to allow humanitarian material to get in. I talked to him. I convinced him to open the gate.
Wow.
Could that have gone any worse? I'm not sure.
It would have been worse.
He takes the bait. Okay, he takes the bait, goes back. He can't make eye contact with the press corps, who sounds like, by the way, howling wolves. A much different press corps than it was one, two, 3 years ago. They're on. They're all over him now.
Right.
They're ripping him apart.
Right.
He gets back up. He can't face him down. He can't get it, bring his eyes out of his notes. And then he delivers, oh, the president of Mexico wouldn't open the gate there in Egypt. Guy.
So
not a good look.
I'll make a wild guess. The most difficult thing that Biden is doing is keeping the border open and refusing to go along with a deal to give Ukraine money because he won't close the border. And, you know, we'll get to the story of what happened with the sheriff in Ohio, but you have huge pressure to close the border and they're not doing it. And I, you know, my guess is that Biden feels very, how can I say this? This is treason. What Biden is doing is treason on the border, and he feels very defensive about it. That's my guess.
Wow. I don't know what he thinks.
So he started talking about what's on his mind. Gaza's not on his mind.
Hey, listen, he just described a genocide as over the top. That's what you got on a genocide. It's over the top, really?
Right.
Ooh. Biden does what he's told because he's a power hungry maniac. He's an egomaniac and he's the president and he put the country back on his feet and he lets reporters speak. He's deranged.
Here's the thing, Biden can't deal with the double binds anymore. And it happens to almost everybody who goes into that position. It didn't happen to Obama, which is why he's probably running things from behind the scenes. But here's the question. The most important question before us, if you were the Democrats and you knew you had to get rid of Biden, what would you do?
I don't know.
Would you really put Harris in as president?
No, absolutely no way.
Okay, well.
Absolutely no way. So your three choices are Gavin Newsom, Michelle Obama, and Hillary Clinton.
I think either, you know, any one of those three is, I mean, Michelle Obama and Hillary Clinton are death. You're going to lose the election. So
as opposed to life, a.k.a. Joe Biden?
Well, no, you got to get rid of Biden. But remember, when they put Ford in, they first had to get rid of Spiro Agnew and get Ford into the VP position. So you can't get rid of Biden without getting rid of Harris, or you make Harris president. I mean, if I was, you can't do Obama and you can't do Clinton. Clinton's a two-time loser, and you're going to guarantee that Trump wins.
Yeah.
It's just you guarantee that Trump wins.
You know, in that arena, there's just the lawlessness is out of control. And we'll see this coming up in a clip from the Supreme Court.
Right.
With this, how did this case make it this far? It's such a dog. I would not place any bets on any legal theories on how Harris, Biden, whoever gets in or out of office.
I completely agree. It will probably be done under the rubric of systemically important.
I would not. Systemically important vice president, you know.
Citibank will declare an emergency and the systemically important banks will get together and decide.
Yeah, go ahead. Take the mask completely off and just have Citibank, Citigroup run everything.
Right. Well, they are the largest owner of the New York Fed, which did steal $21 trillion. So anyway, okay, let's go to the next story.
Let's keep it going. The next story concerns debt. At least on its face, that's not really what I want to look at, though. This is Zero Hedge. Household debt, top $17.5 trillion. So we're not talking about national debt. That's public debt. We're talking about private debt. And as you'll see in this graph, and they, here's the thing, Americans are feeling the strain. This is the story, although they don't, they kind of bury the problem. But they do talk about it. So here's the total debt balance graph from the New York Fed. So you can see that $17.5 trillion. Most of this is housing debt. The vast majority of it is housing debt. There's really no surprise there. So this that would shake out at $17.5 trillion. That shakes out nationwide to just over $53,000 per person. Okay? No real surprise there. This part here doesn't really pan out. Ballooning credit card debt led the way, increasing 4.6% to $1.13 trillion. Credit card balances rose by $143 billion, which is obviously more than 10% of that. So I don't know what these figures don't line up. It's not overly important. This is the real story here. This is unbelievable. Meanwhile, unable to leave their houses due to government lockdowns during the pandemic, but with money still flowing thanks to the Fed buying assets from non-banks, Americans filled up their piggy banks. Okay, aggregate savings peaked at $2.1 trillion in August of 2021. Okay, look at that. That's a big number. As of June, however, the San Francisco Fed estimated the aggregate savings had dropped to $190 billion, all the way from... Americans ran through $1.9 trillion in savings in just 2 years. The effect of that? No surprise here. Aggregate delinquency rates rose by 3.5%, with approximately 8.5% of credit card balances and 7.7% of auto loans transitioning into delinquency.
Right.
Those are staggering numbers.
Right. And they fit with everything I'm seeing and hearing from subscribers.
That's unbelievable.
Well, what you're watching is the juice in the economy being steadily eaten. And, you know, the trajectory is down and you can feel it everywhere you go. So I just think part of the pressure to get stimulus packages going is that you're seeing more and more friction as things don't work. Now, remember, 2024 is the year that you have an enormous amount of commercial real estate in the United States rolling over, and it can't pencil out at these interest rates.
Because the interest rates are remaining high.
Right. What we're watching is in 2024 is we're watching real estate, which has been critical to sort of keeping the economy going, hitting a wall in certain sectors. At the very same time, we see the labor force decimated by poisoning.
Yeah.
So you've got a population that's poisoned. And if you look at that drop in $1.9 trillion, we don't know what the number is. How much of that is healthcare expense? How much of that drop in savings?
Great question.
Right. And what I will tell you from everything I see, a lot of it is healthcare expense. And it's not just my healthcare expense. So let's say I've taken perfect care of my health. I didn't get the shot. You know, I've been very careful. I have friends and family who did, and they need to borrow money. They need to help. And so what you're watching is a drain of savings by people who are poisoned, but a drain of savings by people who weren't poisoned, who've got to help people who were poisoned.
Yeah.
So right. To me right now, the number one cause of diminution of family wealth in America is poisoning.
That would not surprise me. I mean, you just blew through 90% of your savings in 2 years, and it was a big number, $2.1 trillion.
Right.
That's a lot.
Yep, that's a lot. But, you know, I'll just talk about my personal finances. Do you know how much money I've had to gift or loan to people in the last 2 years because they're struggling with the poisoning?
No idea.
It's a remarkable number.
So how does that manifest itself? Someone comes to you and says, I need $1,000 for what?
No, I can't, you know, I can't cover my overhead. I can't cover my bills. I can't, you know, because I can't work or, you know, it's something related to the poisoning.
Gotcha.
Right.
They got taken out of work or they incurred a big bill.
Right.
Right. Those would be the two biggies.
Right. Or they didn't understand what was coming. You know, if you when I settled the litigation in 2006, I tried to set up my entire infrastructure and overhead for what was coming. Right. So on three properties in Hickory Valley, my combined property taxes when I set it up was $500. And I knew if inflation skyrocketed and went, it tripled, you know, my property taxes every year would be $1,500. Right.
Yeah.
And everybody kept saying, why did you choose such a modest infrastructure? And I said, because, you know, I want to travel a lot and I want to be on the road and I want as low an overhead as I can possibly have, but still be comfortable.
Yeah.
So, and I need not 1 ounce of social prestige.
You know, if you're right about what you just said about all this stuff, what that means is that Fed just injected $5 trillion, let's say, into the retail banking supply, into people's accounts, right before the pandemic and at low interest rates, or right at the front end of the pandemic, but before the injections. And then once everybody gets sick and rates go up, then the money gets taken right back out, although it doesn't come right back to the Fed. It goes
But remember, it didn't go equally. If you look at people's personal finances, you got people who got massive injection, people who got, they had a check for $1,000.
I'm aware of the imbalance.
Right. Yeah.
I know. But it did go across and big time all five wealth bands, meaning the top wealth band being the top 0.1% and the lowest wealth band being the bottom 50%. Everybody's checkable deposits went up multiples of what they were before the pandemic. I think the minimum was 4 times and the maximum was 8.5 times. So it wasn't equal, but it was a big number across the board.
So think of it this way. I'm going to exaggerate to make a point. You have a group of people who, because SPACs are flying and the stock market is flying, feel wealthy and are spending. You have a group of people, Bitcoin is being pumped and they feel wealthy and they're spending. And if you look at what they're spending on and how they're spending on, they're spending on an infrastructure and an overhead and a way of life, which is going to get them slaughtered in 2 to 5 years.
Yeah.
Right? Because they don't understand that the wealth effect is a pump and they're going to get dumped. And in the meantime, they're being poisoned and their families are being poisoned.
Yeah.
And so that wealth effect was like methadone that persuades financial methadone that persuades them to get in the trap. But then once in they're in trap, they have the wrong infrastructure, the wrong skills, and now they're poisoned.
Yeah. Right. That's a big anyway. So the wolf is at the door now. Interest rates are still high. CPI came in hot, so interest rates are gonna stay up. And people are running out of money, and delinquencies are up. That's a recessionary an article as I've seen in a while.
But there's a deeper problem, and the deeper problem is, you know, we got into this trap because we were in a trance. So Carolyn Betts and I are recording something. We described it to you. We're going to use your recommendation on the title, "Snap Out of the Trance."
Snap out of it.
Right. So until we snap out of the trance, we're going to keep getting played again and again and again. And I'm sitting here in Tennessee, and what I've been watching as I talk with everybody about the political issues and what we can do about it, again and again and again, I keep seeing people's time wasted because it's being played by this and that and this and that.
They're getting played.
Right. So the establishments that's running the infrastructure, you know, are not, someone like Biden isn't competent. At the same time, when it comes to control and building the control grid and dirty tricks, these guys are really, really good. They're really, really good. And I've spent my life trying to help people not get tricked and played. And, you know, I can't give myself an A+.
But there's Lucy every week with a new football.
Right. Exactly.
Baiting people. And like Biden, people are taking the bait. It's like, I ask people, did you have to watch Charlie Brown 5,000 times to figure out he wasn't going to kick the football?
Okay. Our job is to help our subscribers not get played. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's our goal. So, you know, they're pumping. They're going to pump again. We're coming into a Bitcoin pump and some other pumps. How do we help people not? Because I'm telling you, we just met with a whole group of wonderful subscribers, and the trance is still working.
The magical thinking is a big part of the trance. This guy just came out of nowhere. Ta-da.
Okay, anyway, well, let's keep going because we're
keep it going to FedWatch.
We got it, and it's all of us together. We've got to help each other get out of the trance.
Okay, let's turn to Blackstone and real estate. Blackstone to acquire Tricon for $3.5 billion. Are going to pick up 37,000 homes. Private equity giant Blackstone is set to acquire Tricon Residential in a deal valued at around $3.5 billion. Tricon owns 37,478 homes, which, if you do the math, comes out to about $90,000 per home. That's end of third quarter 2023. Tricon is one of the three big publicly traded institutional home buyers. They are active. Look at where they're active. Kind of interesting. Atlanta, Charlotte, Dallas, Tampa, and Phoenix. They're active in areas that people headed to. To get away from lockdowns, basically.
They're moving south. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but they're taking Blackstone's taking a public company dark,
private.
What's going on? Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
this is a smart way for because Blackstone. My theory is that the Wall Street wants to get. I mean, essentially, they want to convert housing from home ownership to rental.
Yes,
and they want to get. They want to convert that into dividend yielding stocks, on the public market. Because probably Blackstone's exit is to take, is to roll these portfolios up and take them public one way or another. And, but what they want are dividend yields. And the way to do that is to convert people from home ownership to rental. You have no idea how many people in the last year said, I think renting's more convenient. Now, what I will say is when inflation is killing your time, rental is less pressure on your time. Home yep. ownership takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
So
that's you trotted out a figure on one show about how much time the average homeowner spends that wouldn't have been spent on a rental.
I was on the executive committee of the National Multi-Housing Council in the 90s. And we had a presentation from a professor from University of Maryland. And on average, it was 20 hours more a week to be a homeowner.
That rings a bell. Yeah.
Right. And I think I told you that he said that the way the renter spent that 20 hours was watching TV. So I'm not sure the renter was better off. They saved time, but then they lost it to the trance.
Your mind is better off fixing your toilet than it is watching TV. I'll tell you that for sure. Okay.
There you go.
Okay. Let's keep it going on FedWatch. This next story is just, this is the feds nipping at the corners. AT&T seeks to shut down landline service for most of the Bay Area, much of California. This is interesting. A proposal by AT&T to withdraw landline service from most of the Bay Area has sparked widespread fear among residents, many of whom live where cell service is spotty, power outages are frequent, and losing connectivity is very scary. Oakland senior Carla Vinciguerra lives in a three-story home with a landline on each floor. If she suffered a medical emergency and her cell phone were on a different floor, she could possibly crawl to a landline, she said. But without that option, she would have no way to summon help. Okay, that's a fair enough point. What does AT&T say about that? AT&T said its landline services were fast becoming a historical curiosity and serve no valid public purpose. Sorry, Carla, you're just going to have to die on the second floor there.
So the control grid needs a couple of things to get real control, and one of them is to wipe out the landline infrastructure. So this is part of getting complete digital control.
Okay, let me back up. It's AT&T, though, isn't it true that AT&T was caught with landlines in the late 90s in San Francisco yes. running landlines to a secret backdoor server right. or exchange owned by the NSA.
Right. Right. So now AT&T, you know, right now they have to run the run both the landlines and the cell service through the NSA. If they can just run the cell service, it'll be simpler. So you're right, landlines don't solve the problem. One of the things that solves the problem is to have multiple both cell and landline options within a jurisdiction. And what you've been seeing all over the country, there are tons of jurisdictions. So to pay AT&T money at Solari, you need a personal written waiver from me. Okay.
Yeah.
And you have no idea how often I have to give that waiver because the jurisdiction has no option other than AT&T.
Yeah.
So
that story to me, that's trying to force people on the mobile phones.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
Right. But it's also forcing them onto something that can be shut on and off very quickly, easily, very controlled.
I think they could do that anyway. I think it's the tracking that really interests these people more than anything else. In other words, if you are really hell-bent on not being tracked and you don't have a mobile phone, you have a landline, they can't track you. I mean, they can track you when you're on your phone. They know where you are. Well, you live there.
I think they can track you. I think it's more expensive and harder. So it's easier to track if it's all mobile phone. Right.
I don't know if I mean, I've got a watch that's got GPS on it. So they could probably track me without
right.
my cell phone.
I don't know.
But if I took the watch off, I don't think they could.
I think with Wi-Fi and space, the satellite systems, I think they can do an awful lot of tracking now, especially if you've had the injections. So I think they can do a lot of tracking without the mobile phone. But I think the mobile phone plus digital IDs will make life much simpler for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, I think that's right. I think the idea is get everybody on a mobile phone and get a digital ID in.
Right.
Not complicated, you know.
Right.
Okay. Let's keep it going.
AT&T's business is control, not communications. That's been my experience.
You know, AT&T and its predecessor, Ma Bell, they were instrumental in setting up the network that connected mm-hmm. the 12 regional Fed banks.
Right.
They were very, very active in the 50s, stitching that together.
So AT&T was deeply involved in my litigation. So I have a lot of personal experience with AT&T. And they used to try and play games with me on the retail accounts. You know, so in Tennessee, they're big. And there were times when I was, you know, I couldn't, there were no options. Anyway, I had, we had Bell South, and then AT&T bought Bell South. And I experienced a highly competent company, and it reverted to something that became a criminal enterprise war in terms of the billing. But the most fun I had, so I had a very dark opinion of AT&T. I think I told you this, I took a flight from Memphis, it was a domestic flight, and I sat next to a senior engineer from Bell South who was leaving because after AT&T bought them, they bought them about a year or two before. You know, the whole thing went to hell in a handbasket. And he spent the entire flight unloading with me all the things AT&T did to convert Bell South to a corrupt company and, you know, false billing. And anyway, he read me chapter and verse of how they did it. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Life is a criminal enterprise.
Yeah, well, that's AT&T for you. I went toe-to-toe with AT&T in 2012 and said, you're not...
Really? How'd you do that?
Yeah. Well, I had cell service through AT&T
at that time. Ah, okay.
And there was one dispute over the final bill. I said, you'll get that money or my dead body. You'll never get that money.
You sound like me.
Yeah, you never... Good luck. The odds of you getting that money are zero.
Uh-huh.
Let's keep it going in FedWatch. This next story is just downright comical. I got to laugh at this. NC State Extension. This is home of the Wolfpack. That's my school. I love it. Farm law for producers and landowners. Okay. Business entities. New federal reporting requirements for small businesses, including farms. What do we got here? As of January 1st, limited liability companies, corporations, and some business trusts and partnerships are subject to a new reporting requirement under the Federal Corporate Transparency Act, or CTA. CTA was passed out of a public concern that out of 2 million limited liability companies and corporations formed each year in the states, a sufficient number are used by domestic and foreign actors with malign design or pursuing illicit activity detrimental to U.S. security and commerce. Wow, that sounds pretty troubling. What are we going to do about this? We're going to clamp down on this. Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. While there are some business type exemptions, such as banking and insurance, the reporting requirement does apply to farm business operations and landholding companies, landholding entities. Are you kidding me? So these malign actors are on farms?
So the financial guys
farms?
Aren't laundering money. It's the farms.
HSBC paid a $1.92 billion fine for laundering money for drug dealers and terrorists. That's the banks and insurance companies are the money launderers. This is laughable.
So what they want to do is for new companies, it's this year. You have to make sure you report what your true ownership is. For existing companies, it's next year. So if you have an existing company, this is something you're going to grapple with. And I go back to, in 2006, creating an infrastructure that I thought was appropriate to where we were going into. And I said, okay, everything I do is going to be 100% sort of transparent, or as transparent as possible. Because if you look at where they're going, by the time this is over, anything I do to, sort of create a Cayman Island company and keep it, go through Nevada and keep it non-transparent, it's not going to work.
Not going to work.
Not going to work.
But the control grid it's a game of incrementalism.
A little bit more.
Cut down the landlines, increase the reporting requirements for his little farms.
Right. So Bill Gates, think of it simply. Bill Gates is trying to acquire as much farmland as possible. The more you can get everything transparent, and the more you can get all the liens, on electronic systems and the title search on electronic systems and everything electronic, the more you can just, you can play dirty tricks to consolidate and roll up all the land.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Because if you look at the wave right now sitting at the state legislatures, the number of bills coming in to make land grab and facilitate land grab, it is a tsunami. It is absolutely a tsunami. And if you look at the people who are doing it, it's very, very clever, because it's always this and this and this and this. They don't walk in and say, here's the land, here's a land grab bill and make it clear what they're up to. They got 5,000 little tricks.
Wow.
Huh. Yeah.
That's interesting. And that's very believable. Let's keep it going, because this next story, I had to look at this twice. Like, what? This is really kind of a graph from Visual Capitalist. Look at this. 2023 billionaires, winners and losers. And so they just rank them 1 through 13, top gainers. Okay, so this is how much money they gained during 2023, just 1 year. Okay, Elon Musk, up $250 billion. Zuckerberg, up 125. Bezos, 174. And so look at these names. The one name you don't see is Bill Gates, which is interesting. But if you total up these numbers, you can just eyeball that and see that's north of $1 trillion or maybe even $2 trillion. And they're all tech guys. Even this guy, look at this, Steve Ballmer. That's a name you hadn't seen that name in a while.
Right. They're all making money on the control grid.
And how much money did the Fed print starting in 2020 through 2021, 22? It's about $5 trillion. And you're looking at about a quarter of that or more just among those 10 names or so.
Right. And remember, the federal government and governments around the world spent a fortune during that period to install a 5G infrastructure, or a fortune in rules and regulations to help the telecoms install 5G infrastructure. And these guys are now making money playing on that infrastructure without having paid for it.
Yeah.
Right.
You got it.
Right.
Yeah. Very, very good point. But the wealth concentration, I mean, 30 years ago, you'd have the left baying like beagles over something like that.
Bezos just sold $4 billion of stock this last week, right? So Watch him put that money into space.
Yeah, I want to cut back to that chart one more time and look at this name. The top of the list, look at this, Elon Musk, number one, $250 right. billion, dollars, Tesla and SpaceX, because we're going to see his name again
right.
in another story.
Right, but if you go back to that list, Elon Musk, government contractor.
Right.
Mark Zuckerberg, you know, somebody taking orders from the White House on what he does on Facebook. Jeff yep. Bezos, CIA, U.S. intelligence and DOD contractor. Ditto Google. Yep. Ditto Microsoft. You know, money yep. started going missing from the U.S. government when you'd had a special Windows 95 edition for the government. Oracle, government contractor. All these companies are government contractors.
Yep. And yep. this guy, the top of the list, is being positioned socially as like a rebel. Like, are you kidding me?
He's a government contractor.
This guy's a sock puppet. Wake up. Snap out of it.
Okay. I don't know what to tell you.
What am I going to tell you? Okay, let's keep it going with incrementalism with the next story. This is, I think just the gloves are off now. All right, let's look. NBC News, Alabama Station and Solari Money Markets hosts in disbelief after 200-foot radio tower stolen. A radio station in Alabama was forced to go silent after thieves stole its 200-foot radio tower and other equipment from a building. Okay, so the building was vandalized. What did they steal? Thieves stole every piece of equipment from the building, including a transmitter. Okay, so they lost their transmitter, and the 200-foot radio tower was stolen. So one of the guys is like, what do you mean the tower is gone? Are you sure you're in the right place? It's unbelievable. So the station goes to the FCC and says, WJLX, this is the station, notified the FCC that its AM station was silent. The tower is missing. The station was hoping to continue broadcasting its program through FM radio in the meantime. Nah. Unfortunately, this morning I was notified by the FCC. They denied our request to stay on the air on the FM side. So actually, we're about to go power down the transmitter. So the government, FCC, is on the side of the thieves.
Right.
We're just going to keep them, make them shut up.
Well, it was a hit. I mean, that's a hit.
200-foot tower. what did they put in the back of a Ford Ranger?
But the other, I don't know what the resale is on a tower, but you can imagine it's not worth, you know, stealing.
I doubt you could fit a tower, a 200-foot tower, into an. I know they come in segments,
right?
But if you think about the width of it, is that going to fit in an 18-wheeler? Not
well,
a chance.
Here's the thing: how many people does it take, and how long? How many hours does it take overnight to steal a 200-foot trailer? I mean, tower.
You got to disassemble it. You got to have your guys monkey up the pole and.
Well, I dare say the people who could feel that operation can probably tell the FCC what to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so we've seen a lot of dirty tricks to win market share in the media business, but this takes it to a new level.
It does.
Yeah, this takes it because it's a coordinated FCC tower steal on the ground.
That's incredible. A 200-foot tower. Now maybe it's one of those little skinny towers you see, but even there, if you walk up to them, they're not so skinny when you walk up to them.
I don't know. Right? All I can say is somebody wants that market share in Alabama. Now I say that, and I'm headed to a meetup with subscribers in Huntsville on Thursday night. So
it would be great if you could kind of track down some more color on that story.
I would love to. I'll ask them.
Like,
I don't
what
know.
Is going on there?
Somebody okay. wants. Alabama is a pretty interesting place.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. It's a very interesting place. Yeah. So I'd love to know what's going on there.
Many years ago, I had just a colleague who had a couple websites on corruption. And he ended up doing the website for a guy named Al Martin, who professed to be a coming out of O&I, where he'd done financial fraud. And he was very clever and funny. And he wrote a book And then he did this website. And he would write these stories every week about the corruption going on in the federal finances. And he started to write about auction sales out of the back door at the Arsenal in Huntsville, speaking of Huntsville, where I'm going. And every week he would come out with these amazing tales of these arms auctions going out of the back door, where they would auction off publicly stuff and get a lot of money. And that year they were selling the inventory out the back door to private guys and making money. Okay. So it sounded so bizarre. And he's just publishing it week after week after week. And you're thinking, how could this possibly be true? So I'm up at the, he was in Montana. I was up at the webmaster's website, and he said, watch. He said, watch when I put up one of these columns. So he put up the next column about arms sales out of the back door in Huntsville. I'm watching in real time, you know, who's coming in. And those were in the days when you could still identify who was coming in. And so he puts it up, and suddenly for the next 2 hours or 3 hours, it's hundreds of brokerage firms. You know, it's Smith Barney, Solomon Brothers, you know, just tons of brokerage firms coming in to read the column. And you thought, oh my God, this might be true. Because they're looking, you know, they're looking to cold call the winner, you know, whoever gets the money.
Yeah, right. Well, that makes sense. That totally makes sense. That's just business as usual, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's no different than reading new obituaries.
Right. Exactly.
As a trust and estates investor, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't care. They don't care where you got the money. They just know they want to know you have the money. Do you have the money?
All I have to tell you is Alabama's always been an interesting place.
Well, Huntsville is a big tech area. I mean, it has been for a while. And Alabama's got a pretty sizable military footprint too, no?
Very. But if you look at the military spending, the military has a huge footprint in every state.
But really in the South, for sure.
Yeah.
Where they're going to recruit.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, let's turn to Space Military Global Turf Wars. We only got one story this week, but a very interesting story. I'd love to know your read on this. NPR, CEO of major Nigerian bank killed in a helicopter crash in California's Mojave Desert. This guy here on the right, this guy named Michael Graham, he's going to be of the National Traffic Safety Board. He's going to be investigating this crash. But who was on the plane? Herbert Wigway, chief executive of Access Bank, and Ogun Banjo, former chair of NGX Group, the Nigerian Stock Exchange. So these are two heavy hitters, okay? Because Access Bank is a big bank, and Wigway had been at other big banks before. So these are two heavy hitters. They're probably in the U.S. to watch the Super Bowl. Wigway's death, as you can see, Access's bank and presence grew beyond borders in several African countries. His death is a terrible blow for Nigeria and Africa's banking industry. This spokesman, presidential spokesman, Onan Nuga, wrote on X, Wigway had a big vision to make Access Holding, the parent company, Africa's biggest, with all the unquestionable thirds for acquisitions. The Airbus EC-130 left Palm Springs Airport at around 8:45 p.m. on Friday before the Super Bowl and was traveling to Boulder City, Nevada, roughly 200 miles away, a little bit less by air. This is not a big aircraft, this helicopter. This weighs about, I think I read the weight of it is about 3,000 pounds. So it had six people. They're all dead. But this is where we get back to Graham, the guy who's going to investigate. Interesting quote here. This is the beginning of a long process. We will not jump to any conclusions. So there's a big question about what happened to that helicopter, because they already know it's going to take a long time to investigate.
His wife and son were also in the helicopter.
Yeah, so it's banker. It's banker's wife, banker's son, the head of Nigerian stock exchange, former head, and then two pilots. They don't say whether they're local. Probably one of them's local, at least one of them.
Right. So here's the question. If so it's not just the banker, but it's his heirs. So we don't know if he has a major equity position, but if he does, who then gets to control the stock?
Well, he has no you have heirs.
Right.
Right. Different jurisdictions do it differently, but they'll go up and then over and down your family tree and find. Now, not every place does that.
Right.
You know, but don't be fooled into thinking it's only direct issue.
Oh, no. I don't think it's direct issue. But the further you get from home, the less knowledge they have.
Yeah.
So I don't know. This looks very suspicious to me.
Me too. Very, very odd. But you don't know. I mean, there's been a lot of odd things happening. One story we're not covering this week, maybe we'll get to it next week, I think it was coffee and COVID. And said, you know, there's a lot of suspicious refinery fires around the U.S. And they track in time bombings inside of Russia. Sort of, they had a refinery fire, and then next week there was a refinery fire in the U.S. It's like a tit for tat game going on.
Right. So I think the asymmetrical warfare that's going on covertly is very significant.
Yeah. It would not surprise me one bit if this is related to the sort of the off the books warfare. Let's call it that.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Anyway, let's keep it going with the Hey Robot. I've got a couple stories this week. The first story is interesting for a couple reasons, but let's just get in. This is Last Refuge, Sundance. Western sanctions against Russia and U.S. CBDC. This is one of these like, okay, I'm starting to get tired of hearing about U.S. CBDC if you're not going to add anything to the conversation. But here we go. Several crypto conversations. So this guy, Sundance, goes to Europe and he talks to a bunch of people, and now he's going to have his report on what he's learned.
So before you go into this, let me just say, this is a website I have a lot of respect for, and Sundance is a writer I have a lot of respect for. Now, he usually...
Yeah, this is not his best work.
Right. Well, he usually covers legal issues, so my guess is he's a pretty seasoned attorney. So he's out of his lane, he's into finance. But he's still, this is someone I have a lot of respect for.
Yeah. No, he's written really good stuff. But the CBDC, you know, it's all bad. We're all going to be controlled. That alarm is a little bit too loud for these ears. If you're just going to add noise to it, it's not really helpful. This is not helpful. I want to point out why.
Okay.
Several crypto conversations in the EU at various cafes. So he's talking to people in cafes, and these are people who have deep understanding. Okay. The commonly accepted bottom line is Western sanctions, or organized by the Biden administration and U.S. Treasury, were not intended to put financial walls around Russia. They were designed to put control walls around the USA. Russia was the useful justification. And he points out, he says, well, you know how the Patriot Act was not designed to stop terrorism, but rather to create domestic surveillance system. True that. So too were the Russian sanctions not designed to sanction Russia, but rather to create financial control system that will lead the USA to a digital currency. Okay, I'm all ears. Tell me how. Now, does the exploding debt and seeming government ambivalence take on a new perspective? No. They do not. I don't see how the exploding debt is connected to this at all. It should, because that unspoken motive explains everything. Really? This is not accidental, folks. Okay, well, I'm waiting for the connection. Give me the punchline. Okay, so it turns out a person could buy a phone and register a phone from within the EU and then go back to the USA and access all the blocked and restricted financial processes, Binance, MetaMask, all this other stuff. This would permit them to do untracked financial transactions into and out of Russia from the USA without the U.S. government knowing about them. So the U.S. government doesn't know about them. Okay, so you can get around the sanctions by buying a phone. If the U.S. government knows this, even though you just told me they don't know it, what's the point of the sanctions? Asked and answered, he says. It's a lawyer phrase. The Western sanctions created a financial wall around the USA not to keep Russia out, but to keep us in. Yeah, you already told us that. We didn't prove it. The Western sanction regime, the financial mechanisms they created and authorized, create the control gate that leads to a U.S. digital currency.
So I agree with him. I don't agree that it was just to do this. But I agree that the sanctions made it easier to get U.S. financial institutions to do those things with digital systems that make it much easier to identify what people are spending money on and to create gates to shut them down. So if you look at the build out of the digital control grid, I really think the sanctions were a piece of helping that. Now, it wasn't just the United States, it was Europe too. So to me, the sanctions were as much a hit on Europe as on the United States. But I don't agree completely that they haven't used the sanctions to make life tougher. Or the message to the world on the sanctions is, you know, there's our channel and their channel. We want you in our channel. If you go in their channel, we're going to give you trouble. So this is trying to make sure everybody stays in the channel and setting up the infrastructure to make sure the retail guys, you know, can be forced to stay in the channel. So I think this is part of what I call channel wars. So, you know, I think Sundance got a lot wrong in that article, but I think the fundamental essence of part of the sanctions was to build the control grid and you better be careful is right.
I just don't see any connection whatsoever. I don't see any explanation between the sanctions and the control in the U.S. Not a single connection was explained in that article. Moreover,
I don't think he explained the details. So he didn't explain
any details. A single connection between the two.
Okay. I agree.
And the other thing is, I think it's entirely reasonable to think that people in the Biden administration are having such a tantrum over Russia, that the sanctions really weren't that well thought through. And they thought, oh, well, we're the big U.S. We'll show Russia and we'll freeze their assets and we'll steal their money and just to get them. And no one really thought it through. I think you're giving the powers that be, and I think you're giving the criminals in charge way too much credit to think they had any sort of thinking that far advanced that they're going to put in guardrails and all this other stuff. I think it was an classic tantrum.
No, I think their thinking of the sanctions was sloppy vis-a-vis Russia, but if you look at their building out of the control grid, that's been continuous and steady. And I think they can absolutely use I did a review many years ago on one of the books on sanctions written by one of the guys at Treasury who developed them. And if you look at the thinking that's gone into building out the sanctions, it's very long and deep. It's been going on for a long time. And absolutely, these sanctions help you do a lot more identification and surveillance in the Western financial institutions and then institute a lot more control. It's just the whole trend. So don't let the Biden administration is clearly not what you would call competent, but the infrastructure building out the sanction regimes and the financial guys and the tech guys, they are competent at this. They are competent at building the control grid.
There's no doubt that the control grid has continued to be built out. That's not the issue.
Right.
The issue is the sanctions. They're different. Sanctions are not grid. Grid is infrastructure. Sanctions are you can't do this, you can't do that, Russia.
Right.
Like you can't buy Russia. I don't see how restricting Russia from buying or doing banking in Europe or anywhere, that's putting a collar on my neck. I, you know what? I'm all ears. I'm all ears. Tell me how that connects.
Because in the regulation, it gives you the ability to say we have to identify and make sure things aren't going to Russia. So we need to know where they're going. And so it gives you an infrastructure. It gives you much more infrastructure and ability to require banks to identify where the money's going and prove it's not going here, it's not going
okay.
there.
Let me ask a better question. As a result of the sanctions, as a result of the Russia sanctions, what can the federal government now look at with respect to my finances that they couldn't look at before the sanctions?
Well, that's a good question. What could they do? What did it add to the Patriot Act? You know, what could the Patriot Act not do? So remember, the Russian sanctions is stopping you from sending money to all sorts of places which are not terrorists and are clearly not terrorists and have no record of terrorism. But it gets you to do the kind of surveillance on non-terrorists that the Patriot Act gives you on terrorists. or potential terrorists.
So what could they look at that they couldn't look at before?
Well, place-based data is everybody. If they can require you to explain the place-based nature of where you're sending money, you know, that's 100% of transactions, and that gives you all the surveillance you need to use the WHO infrastructure for control.
So place-based now, that was the direct result of the
Russia sanctions. I'm guessing.
You're guessing.
I would have to sit down with a bank, but right. I know that there's a tremendous amount of data that you need to do what they want to do that the Patriot Act doesn't give you.
That piece by Sundance is all heat and no light for my money. And there's a lot of that going on with CBDC. I see a lot of that.
Right. And I have to agree with you because I don't think the problem is CBDC. If anything, CBDC is a Trojan horse.
Right.
The digital control is going to come in at a much more granular level and can be instituted with credit cards and debit cards. Or bank accounts.
Let's keep our eye on the ball. Right. The problem is you want to keep your eye on the ball. Do not let them ban cash. They get anywhere near cash, scream bloody murder.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do not let them ban cash or checking. Because remember, the checking clearance system is still an open system.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. And it works with physical checks. So don't let them ban cash and do not let them ban checking.
That's an excellent point. And that's all you need to say. This all this stuff about the CBDC and it's just like, okay, enough. Let's talk about cash. Let's talk about how great and awesome cash is.
Yes. I couldn't. In terms of taking action, yes. But what I will say is, you know, the Russian bear is being used to justify all sorts of ridiculous stuff, as we've seen. And this is just Sundance saying it's another example of the Russian bear, just like the Russian bear was used, you know, to do all sorts of ridiculous things vis-a-vis President Trump. It's just, the foreign boogeyman.
Right.
Okay. So again and again, the story keeps coming up, foreign boogeyman, foreign boogeyman, foreign boogeyman. And all Sundance is saying is they're using foreign boogeyman to implement more aspects of the control grid.
Boy, that was a lot of words to say that, I must say.
Well, but here's the thing. You're a litigator, so you want to see the nuts and bolts, and he didn't give us the nuts and bolts.
He didn't give us anything.
And you know when you don't get the nuts and bolts, you can make bad mistakes.
Yeah.
So you're like, Sundance, okay, I want the nuts and bolts.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, let's keep it going. One more story in Hey Robot. This is an interesting one, not because of the story itself. I don't know who this is, Trish Wood. Smartphones are the weapon.
Trish Wood is very good.
Okay. I don't doubt that, but I've routed the audio this week, so we could not listen to this. Anyway, the whole thing is it's a podcast, but there's the reason I flagged this is that there was a commenter in this guy named Clay who had a very interesting comment on cell phones are the weapon. I did not know this. I want to punch in a little bit. Clay says in this comment, there are ways to have a smartphone without surrendering your autonomy. To start with, there are alternatives to iOS and Android that don't harvest your data to sell to the highest bidder. You can install Lineage OS, Graphene OS, Cal X OS, EOS, or a wide variety of devices. If you're in the market for a new phone, there are companies like Librem in North America and Fairphone in Europe that specifically make phones designed for privacy. Beyond that, it's just a matter of not installing Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Those apps are not preloaded in the alternative OSEs. That is really interesting. Good. I'd love to know if that's true.
I'm traveling with a Fairphone that I'm trying to set up like he's describing. So I have a Fairphone in Europe.
It right there is another reason. If people don't allow comments on an article, I'm really skeptical because the comments, it's like mining for gold. Mm-hmm. You have to wade through a lot of garbage, but you get nuggets like that, like to make it worth it.
So we only allow comments for subscribers because what we learned early on was comments from the public were, you know, a lot of work and not a lot of useful intelligence.
Believe me, I get it. That's a great policy. That's a way to increase your batting average when it comes to shifting through the gold. I don't have to go through two mountains of dirt when I've got Solaris subscribers, I've got, they're giving the best of the best right here.
Well, it's not just dirt, but you know, it's a pound of dirt and a pound of defense contractors, you know, paid to make trouble.
Yeah, exactly. You got it.
And that wasn't the hard part. The defense contractors making trouble was not the hard part. It was the fact that everybody else believed them to be sincere.
Yeah.
That was hard.
Yeah. I want to circle back to a story we skipped in FedWatch. It's a video. It's not really a video. It's an audio. And this is a Supreme Court case involving Donald Trump being excluded from the ballot in Colorado by someone in the Colorado secretary. It's an unelected official who blocked Trump from being on the ballot due to the fact that he was, quote, an insurrection. He was guilty of insurrection. And I want to play this clip from this audio clip from the Supreme Court to give your subscribe a flavor for how weak the case was. And I want to point out before I play this clip,
this is unbelievable. If I heard this in a district court, I'd be shocked. The idea that this could happen at the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
This is unbelievable. And I couldn't, when I first heard this, I couldn't believe it. And then I asked you, you know, and your explanation was pretty logical. I just can't believe that a case this week could get to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. But the Q&A we're going to hear, the questioner is Gorsuch, and the attorney for Colorado is actually a former Supreme Court clerk who clerked for Gorsuch, not when Gorsuch was on the Supreme Court, but when Gorsuch was on the Tenth Circuit. And the attorney who's being questioned later clerked for Kagan on the Supreme Court. So this is the best of the best. Okay. And by way of that background, let's now play this clip. He's asking the attorney, what's up with this insurrection argument? Okay.
He's disqualified from the moment, self-executing, done. And I would think that a person who would receive a direction from that person, the president, former president, in your view, would be free to act as he or she wishes without regard to that individual.
I don't think so, because I think, again, the de facto officer doctrine would nevertheless come into play to say this is
no de facto. That doesn't work, Mr. Murray, because de facto officer is to ratify the conduct that's done afterwards and insulate it from judicial review. Put that aside. I'm not going to say it again. Put it aside. OK, I think Justice Alito is asking a very different question, a more pointed one and more difficult one for you. I understand, but I think it deserves an answer on your theory. Would anything compel a lower official to obey an order from, in your view, the former president?
I'm imagining a situation where, for example, a former president was, you know, a president was elected and they were 25 and they were ineligible to hold office, but nevertheless they were put into that office.
No, we're talking about Section 3. Please don't change the hypothetical, okay?
Wow. Wow. The attorney's like, oh, just say, I'll answer a different question. That one's too hard. That's how pathetic that case was. That right there, if that is not an illustration of Trump derangement syndrome, nothing is. You're so deranged, you push this case. And remember, this case was talked about on the media as a slam dunk for Colorado. Like, this is guaranteed. Lawrence Tribe is like, oh, Colorado's definitely going to win this. Are you kidding me?
Well, but I think what's important is to understand that a group of people created an official narrative that was so divorced from reality that it was beyond absurd. You know, Biden's the president and he's competent to be the president. January 6th was an insurrection. You know, we're back to really something which is so Mickey Mouse.
right.
You know, it's Mickey Mouse other than the fact that it's responsible for nuclear bombs and weapons. Do you know what I mean? It's pretty frightening. But we're talking about something which is the most Mickey Mouse we've ever seen these folks come up with. And they've come up with a lot of Mickey Mouse stuff.
Yeah.
So we're coming, you know, and this whole thing is unraveling because Biden's not competent. January 6th was an op from the beginning and a joke. And And but you're forcing people like Supreme Court justices who are serious judges. These are serious people. And you're asking them to grapple and take this seriously. And they can't.
I know. Right? It's right. It's a, you're making Gorsuch watch a TikTok video and he just can't handle it.
Right. But so this absurd fantasy in many different aspects is grinding into reality. You know, whether it's the special prosecutor saying Biden is too senile to stand trial, so it doesn't matter if he broke the law. Right. And then Biden tells you he didn't break the law because the special prosecutor said so. And then, you know, or this rolling into the Supreme Court. But yeah. At some point, reality matters and facts matter. And what we are seeing, and we'll see it with the last story and pushback, is reality is getting the upper hand.
It's not only getting the upper hand, but it's filling up the space, and it's filling up a lot of space. It's starting to really make headway. That can no longer be ignored. It can't be ignored by Biden. It can't be ignored by Gorsuch. It's making headway.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you, we are coming into a very important tipping point, and that tipping point is. The American people had 2-point-something trillion in savings, and now it's down 1.9. And there's what's left? 200 billion?
Yeah, it went from 2.1 trillion to 190 billion, if I remember the numbers correctly.
When that goes to zero, you are talking about hitting a reality tipping point. And suddenly, reality is going to get a lot more popular.
You may be there now because there's a delay in those figures.
Of course. I know we're there now. I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it here on the ground. So get ready.
get ready. And on that note, let's turn to Farmageddon. And we'll bat lead off with a video from Andrew Bridgen in the UK, who's talking about the effect of vaccines. This is pretty potent stuff. Let's just roll this.
Last January, before I was expelled from my party, for speaking out about the vaccines, a party grandee who will remain nameless, but you'd all know him. And I was in his office, and he'd given me 4 days' notice of coming and seeing him in his office for me, so we're going to have a big discussion. So I spent an hour and a half explaining my concerns around the vaccines, the vaccine harms. Also, NICE guideline NG163 in the UK, which was the use of midazolam and morphine to euthanise elderly, vulnerable elderly who are in hospital. And of course, since midazolam and morphine is a respiratory suppressant, that gave them all the symptoms of COVID-19, which was put down on their death certificates. It was claimed that it was for treating COVID-19. Why on earth would you treat someone who's got respiratory problems with a severe respiratory suppressant? Is a question that the government can't answer. And at the end of an hour and a half of raising these questions, and also, he didn't know, this senior member of my party, who I respected and thought was a friend, didn't know that I knew that his sister had to go into hospital after the second Pfizer jab and stayed in for 2 days with chest pains. He knew. He said he didn't know anything about it. And he said at the end of the hour and a half, Andrew, there's currently no political appetite for your views on the vaccines. There may well be in 20 years' time, and you're probably going to get proven right then. But in the meantime, you need to bear in mind that you're taking on the most powerful vested interest in the world.
Okay. So to summarize that testimony or that statement in one sentence, it's really people were euthanized, people were murdered on a massive scale in order to prop up demand and to market a demand for vaccines. Fair enough?
That was one of the reasons. You know, if you think there's no way this mass atrocity was engineered to generate pharma profits. Pharma profits was part of the incentive to the pharmaceutical companies to go along. You know, but you had, if you look at all the money at play, There were much bigger pots of money in play. This was about building the control grid. And this was about doing the going direct reset. So the pandemic was part of the reset. There's a one of my favorite, I think one of the best pandemic speeches I saw was Representative Halsey in the state caucus in Tennessee saying, okay, we create two classes of business. One are useful and the other are not useful. And right. so then and he goes through how the useful business pick up all the market share and make a lot of money. And he unpacks the game, the disaster capitalism game. So if you look at the money at play, it's much bigger than pharmaceutical profits. That's a tiny piece of the money at play here.
Right. 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 So at the end of that clip, he says, well, you're up against the most powerful force. I don't necessarily think he meant pharmaceutical companies.
No, he means the central bankers.
He means the people behind the pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah. He means the central bank. Well, if you look at the planet, think of the planet as a house. You've got the asset, you've got the liabilities and the insurance, and then you've got the equity. So the central bankers and the insurance companies, the systemically important institutions, are the liabilities and sort of manage the liability and insurance. But then you've got the intergenerational capital that is the long-term equity. And those are the most powerful people behind the scenes. But in terms of day-to-day operation and implementation, this is the central bankers, and they're all hiding behind the health guys, which is smart, yeah. Wouldn't you?
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Yep. Hide behind science, hide behind right. experts. A lot of hiding behind experts.
Well, think about it. Powell just did a 60-minute interview. And what that tells me is somebody's saying, okay, there's a lot of interest in the central bankers and seeing the central bankers behind it. So we got to get Powell out there and calm them down.
I think part of the Powell interview was to sort of popularize a notion that he's trotted out for years, which is the U.S. is on an unsustainable fiscal path. We've talked about that for years now.
Well, they are.
Yeah.
When the New York Fed transfers all the money out the back door, every time you issue debt.
That's not what he's saying.
That's unsustainable. Of course. Yeah. Of course, because remember, he got put over at Carlyle when they started to march the money out of the back door, and Carlyle started to magically raise tons of money that nobody could figure out where it was coming from. That's how Powell made his fortune.
But he wouldn't agree that that's what's going on. He would agree. What he's saying is that even if everything I'm saying is true, we're still on an unsustainable fiscal path because we're not, the interest payment basically is too high for the U.S. Our tax receipts aren't enough to cover our monthly nut or yearly.
Right, because we issue debt when we don't need to. We have a debt-based currency. They could just issue greenbacks. They don't need to have $21 trillion of debt. They could have issued greenbacks and then stolen the $21 trillion out the back door.
They're going to clean that up, and I think that's what they're going to try to clean that up eventually.
Right.
And I think that 60 Minutes interview is part of an ongoing process. Right. We're not done with Powell.
Right. But let me tell you where they're going. Where they're going is they want control of your banking account because they want taxation without representation. Because the way they've kept this system working is by paying everybody off and buying everybody off. Okay? So if you look at the amount of money from government contracts, government subsidies, government credit rolling into every county in America, so the 3,100 counties, and they're swimming in government money, which has been used to buy people into a system which is not economic, but it does give them central control. Now they want it for free. And the way they get it is by getting transaction control.
Well, let me tell you something. They're going to get transaction control, and you're going to give it to them because they're going to make you an offer you can't refuse. That's coming. They're going to make an offer that seems like a sweetheart deal, like, hey, sounds really good. They're going to get control of banks, pretty sure.
So if they get complete control of the banking system and transactions, then we're going to be slaves.
Yeah, I get that. That's why you got to say no when the offer comes, but the offer is coming.
Right. So you better say no.
The offer is going to be, we'll buy up all the debt, all the debt from the U.S. and, in exchange, we'll recycle the interest back to you.
So I'm not sure what the offer is going to be yet. I'm not confident I can see how they're going to play this because it looks to me like they're not sure yet.
No, they know. That's what I'm telling you. The offer is going to be, we'll buy up all the debt from the U.S. government And don't worry about paying us, because all those interest payments you're going to make, we'll recycle them right back to you guys.
Right. But it's going to come with complete control. And then you've got taxation with no representation.
Exactly.
And you're a slave. Right. So they need the control grid. They want total control.
Yeah, they do.
And that's their solution. We get total control, and then, you know, we don't need to care what you think at all. You just do what we say, or you're dead.
We don't need to pretend that we care anymore. That's
right. So maybe we should say we're not all. They're planning not just for us all to be Canadian truckers. They're planning us for us all being Nigerian bank CEOs.
Or residents of Gaza.
Right. Thank you.
Let's keep it going with Farmageddon, because we just saw Bridgen say, you know, the intentional murder of a lot of people to prop up a demand for a cure to a respiratory disease, right? Take a look at this next article. This is odd. It's from ResearchGate. Excess deaths in the UK. Midazolam and euthanasia in the COVID-19 pandemic. It's exactly what he was just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
What's it say here? Macro data during the COVID-19 pandemic in the UK are shown to have significant data anomalies and inconsistencies with existing narratives. This paper shows that the UK spike in deaths wrongly attributed to COVID-19 in April 2020 was not due to COVID, which was largely absent. It was really due to the widespread use of midazolam injections, which were statistically very highly correlated with excess deaths in all regions of England during 2020. Okay, that's pretty much what he just said. So far, so good. Then it goes on. Importantly, excess deaths remained elevated following mass vaccination in 2021, but were statistically uncorrelated to COVID injections, while remaining significantly correlated to midazolam injections.
Wow.
Interesting. So we'll concede the point on midazolam, but the injections for COVID, they're still good. No, not a problem there at all.
One of the reporters that did the most amazing job in the pandemic was a British reporter named Jackie DeVoe,
uh-huh,
who really nailed the midazolam story, working with the families of people who'd been euthanized. People would get phone calls on a Friday night and say, your father's going to die. Your father's going to die at midnight, Saturday night, so you want to come in and say goodbye now?
Yeah, right.
So they would tell them exactly when they were going to die. And anyway, she's coming out with a new movie, and apparently it's just done, and they're about to start marketing. And when that comes out, it's really going to blow the story much higher. So, and one of the reasons is, as Polly Tommy goes around the United States on the bus, she's getting the same stories. We published something called Stories from the Bus at Tulare, and it's some of the interviews where this is happening all over the United States. So, you know, the message to all of us is, if you're going into the hospital, make sure somebody else is there with you, and make sure you give very clear instructions. They may not give you remdesivir.
Yeah, right. Make sure. If you got to go to the hospital, yeah, take somebody with you for sure.
Right, right.
And remdesivir, I mean, how people are still taking that is beyond me, given all the publicity on that, the negative publicity. It's a killer.
You still have a lot of people who believe their doctor.
Oh, wow. Wow. Anyway. Let's keep it going on Farmageddon. This next clip is from Kennedy. And let's just hear what he has to say. This is really interesting. He's a Kennedy. So this is getting a lot of exposure. A lot of people are hearing this. Listen to this.
4% of our GDP went to healthcare when my uncle was president. Today, 20% does. It's $4.3 trillion. Our entire defense budget, including national security, veterans, everything is $1.3 trillion. Healthcare is $4.3 trillion, and 93% of Medicare claims are for chronic disease. 6% of kids had chronic disease when my uncle was president, 60% today. Nobody's saying anything. All these autoimmune diseases, which I never heard of, rheumatoid arthritis, juvenile diabetes, these exotic illnesses like Crohn's disease, lupus. I have a lot of young people in my audience. Almost all of them have something. It's hard to find a young person who does not have one. neurodevelopmental disorders, ADD, ADHD, speech delay, language delay, tics, Rett syndrome, ASD, autism. Our kids are all on Adderall. They're all on SSRIs, 40%. Benzos, why? Doctors didn't just start prescribing these for no reason. We have damaged this entire generation. We have poisoned them. And the autism rates have gone from 1 in 10,000 in my generation, 70-year-old men, 1 in 10,000 of people my age has autism. And I'm talking full-blown autism, not, you know, your quirky uncle with, you know, Asperger's. I'm talking about nonverbal, non-toilet train, head-banging, stimming, toe-walking, hand-flapping, all of these, you know, characteristic tactile and light sensitivities. That, people like that, 1 in 10,000 in my generation. 1 in every 34 kids in my kids' generation.
Wow.
1 in every 22 boys. The military can't recruit kids anymore. They're so badly damaged. And it's bankrupting our country, and it's rising exponentially, and nobody is mentioning it. And we have a medical cartel, which are regulatory agencies, the pharmaceutical companies, the doctors, the hospitals, that, which are all owned by hedge funds, are now making a killing on chronic disease. And the sicker we get, the richer they get. The insurance industry. The sicker we are, the richer they are.
That's really it. The sicker we are, the more money those hedge funds make. That's who's running things.
So the Saleri Report has been using the word poisoning about this for a decade.
Yeah.
And it's great to see Kennedy using that word.
Right.
And I'll tell you where that word came from. So I was poisoned 8 times during the litigation. Actually, one time was coming into the litigation, but during the whole process, 8 times. Because of that, I spent a lot of time trying to learn about poisoning as a political tactic and, you know, how poisoning works, how it gets delivered. Anyway, so I spent a lot of time reading about poisoning. And what I discovered was it was a much more common political tactic than I had ever realized. And then as I went through the detoxing process to try and heal myself, I started to watch what was going on in America. And I realized, oh, it doesn't just happen to, you know, somebody who's an enemy of the state. There is a great poisoning going on in general. We are being poisoned as a society. And this is a plan. This is intentional. And so everything that Kennedy says is true. Now, I'll tell you what the big problem is. Because Kennedy does something which I always get irritated at people for doing. He said, nobody's talking about this. Well, that's not true. You have tremendous numbers of great people who have been talking about it, including for more than a decade.
Yeah.
You know, Mercola's been talking about it. Kennedy and CHD have been talking about it. Weston Price has been talking about it. I've been talking about it. Saleri Report, lots of people have been talking about it.
Right.
The problem is we're all listening to the people who are lying to us and are paid by the people who are poisoning us. That's the problem.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. The problem.
That's the problem. Yeah. So if you listen and trust your enemy, you're going to die. So the problem is that we are still thinking that the people paid by our enemies are somebody and the people doing something about this are nobodies. So
that's a big part of the problem.
Right.
But I get his point. It's really a study in contrast. It's like this is if he's right about that, and I think he is, and those are staggering numbers, especially the 1 in 10,000 or 1 in 34. And look who's profiting from this.
1 in 22 boys. 1 in 22 boys.
Those are off the chart numbers.
Right.
And he's bankrupt. They're bankrupting us and they're killing us. That deserves to be the number one story.
Yes.
On everybody's lips.
Yes.
And it's not. It's way down the list. Pretty much across the board. That's kind of how I take that. I get that. I would have pitched that differently, and I think you're probably with me on that.
Right.
But I get what he's saying.
Yeah.
You know, we need to get real about what's going on, but we're not really allowed to talk about it.
One of the most popular interviews last year was our interview with Toby Rogers, who's been in the lead on highlighting the bankruptcy nature, both the extent of this and the bankruptcy nature of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's an incredible clip, though, because it can't be said enough times. If you say it once, it's not going to sink in. You need to keep hammering on that. That's just, those figures he trots out.
The notion that it's that much bigger than the military and intelligence? Wow.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, let's keep it going. The last story in Farmageddon is a clip, and it's a clip from DARPA, part of the military. So what is it doing in Farmageddon? You know, again, we see this connection between the military and, you know, bad pharma. But I want you to watch this clip. This is like an ad from DARPA, like, hey, look what we've got. Isn't this great? No, it's not great. It's horrifying. Let's look at this.
The key innovation that was presented to us is they said, why can't we make a chemical substance that's really identical to what's underneath the skin, what we call the subcutaneous tissue, so that your body doesn't recognize it as a foreign body response. It just incorporates itself into the tissue. And we have a lot of examples now where a sensor put right underneath the skin can sense things like oxygen and other chemicals that are very important to our metabolism. And not just sense that for a day or a week or even a month, but we imagine that sensing these parameters can go on for a period of years. One of the most important applications to us is so that we can improve the health of our worldwide deployed military force. We feel a strong sense of obligation that if we're going to ask somebody to be deployed and to carry out their mission, that we want to keep them healthy. And this technology will give us a way to monitor if someone is getting sick. We imagine that we would be able to sense that very early and therefore prevent them from getting sick and prevent their complications, allow them to stay healthy and continue to carry out their mission. In addition, if our technology translates into general health benefit, we're very excited about that. So in other words, we fund those national security applications. The company finds private sector partnership funding for that general health benefit. And we see it as really a win-win as this technology develops.
Is that not one of the creepiest things you've ever seen?
So I listened and read a whole lot about during the Vietnam War with DARPA and the military working to try and digitize the Ho Chi Minh Trail. And since then, if you look at the history of them trying to digitize everything, you know, there's a lot of digital stuff, mysterious ingredients in the food or in the global spraying. Uh-huh. And you realize these guys wanted to digitize everything. They want to digitize the soil. They want to digitize the animals. They want to, you know, there's a big fight now in Congress again because they want to tag all the cattle, and Massey's out on Twitter saying, no, 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 no. They want to digitize everything. Everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they want to monitor everything.
Yeah.
Across the world in
right.
real time and unbeknownst to you and your body. Yeah, I want to cut back to this. I want you to look. I watched this video a couple of times putting this together, and I was like, I got hung up on this one thing. Look at this. Okay, so here's a guy. He's looking at his phone. Okay.
Yeah.
But look what is on his phone. Okay, that's a white guy. No. That's not a white guy. It's like, oh, here we're the benevolent guy in the sky, the doctor in the sky. We're looking after your health.
Jesus.
Like
I hadn't
that?
Noticed that one.
Yeah,
I hadn't noticed
pay
that.
Attention throughout that. You kind of watch a couple times into the color schemes. It's like the soldier, like getting sick. Like, we're going to.
It's the all seeing eye.
That is Creepsville. That. And DARPA's like, hey, isn't this great? Give us a thumbs up on our YouTube video. This is.
I'm not suggesting you do that, but if you sat down for a couple weeks and read the whole history of DARPA and what they've done, you just can't believe that the impulse is this.
Yeah, right. Yeah, DARPA's not a good, their track record's bad. Right.
But here's what's important to me about this video, John, is the guy saying it doesn't realize there's a problem with what he's saying.
Here's
the thing. It's the whole thing. The bubble is out of control because it just has lost its connection to reality. Okay. And that's why we are feeling so much friction, because the official narrative is collapsing into reality. And remember, all those people in the official narrative, they're lost in a bubble. They're lost.
They are. Don't worry about Big Brother. He's having a nice lamb chop at an Italian restaurant with a glass of wine. He cares about you. He's happy for your health. That's that messaging there. It's sick.
You know something? The entire United States and in many respects the Western world is lost in a trance. We are going to have to snap out of it.
Yeah. Lost in a trance big time. Right. I don't think most people would bat an eye at an ad like that. Like, oh, that seems good. Yeah, your body doesn't know about it.
I don't know about that.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, but that's it. That's it for Farmageddon. To end that one on DARPA. Happy Valentine's Day.
What about pushback? We gotta go.
Happy Valentine's Day. We're here for pushback. Come. Okay, yeah. Here we go.
This warms my heart.
Yeah, first, this is from Texas. This gets back to, you know, you got way better odds on the state level than the federal level, I think. Yes. And this is an example. Can you imagine this letter? This is from Senator Bob Hall sends a letter to the head of Texas Medical Board. Okay, that's the head of Texas. That's the closest thing they have to a surgeon general. Senator says, I urge you to take immediate action and halt the promotion of the Pfizer and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines and issue a clear risk warning until a thorough and independent investigation is conducted to address the issues mentioned above. And so this comes out. He's not writing in his private capacity. He's writing on Senate letterhead. Can you imagine someone in the U.S. Congress writing a letter like that to the Surgeon General? No.
Yes, I can.
Who would write a letter like that?
Within the next 3 months, Massey could write a letter like that. Rand Paul could write a letter like that.
I'm not holding my breath.
On the pandemic, when they did the first vote on the pandemic restrictions, the vote was 99-1, Rand Paul was against.
Yeah.
The only one who voted against.
Yep. True that. Yep. Yeah. But the 99-1 kind of underscores my point, which is your odds are better at the state level. The state could have blocked that stuff too. It's not going to happen at the federal level. They're in the bag.
There is exceptional talent at the state level. You know, I've been meeting with legislators and talking with legislators all around the country, and you have people of an exceptional talent, and they are deeply vested in reality. And the feedback that pours into them every day is reality. So it's going to be very interesting to see what they are capable of doing. So it doesn't surprise me to see this happening in Texas. Remember, as that savings goes to zero, this is going to accelerate because the bankruptcies from this are extraordinary.
Yeah, they are. Your odds, I mean, but there's 50 states, know, and so your odds of one slipping through, a state getting through, a measure that really curbs the abuse of authority from the feds, the odds go up. And if one succeeds, you're going to get copycats. You're just way better off at this.
It's not going to be one that succeeds. It's going to be a cluster.
Right.
A cluster succeeds, and they're going to be helping each other.
Right.
So, right.
Right. But that revolution, as John Adams said, it starts in the minds of the people. So.
Right.
Okay, let's keep it going and push back. This next story from Off Guardian, we haven't seen them in a while, but this is a good piece. It touches on something we touched on last week, which is sort of the shift in the media. What no one is saying about Tucker Carlson's Putin interview. This is by Kit Knightley, who we've had on before. He's really good. What's he say? He says, let's remind ourselves that everyone is talking about the Putin interview. everyone from Hillary to Elon to Russell Brand. Let's compare and contrast the coverage of the Putin interview to the coverage of Oliver Stone's four-part interview on Putin. Seriously, look at the difference. There are no big headlines for Oliver Stone. He says, but I don't want to talk about Putin because everybody's talking about, I want to talk about Carlson. And Kit Knightley says that this is the Tucker Carlson who has been suddenly positioned as a supposed anti-establishment, JFK doubting, 9/11 truthing threat to the system. The same Tucker Carlson whose father was director of the Voice of America and who censored and insulted the 9/11 skeptics on his show. So he's done an about face with all the hero kudos being exiled by the establishment. So he's kicked out of Fox. Carlson has been live streaming his show on X instead. And every single one of them gets more views than CNN or MSNBC or his old show on Fox combined. So by himself, he's drawing more viewers than all three of those combined. What's going on here? By seeding the rising new media with establishment voices that allegedly gone rogue, the establishment can take control of it. That's how you end up with crazy scenarios where billionaires like the aforementioned Elon Musk are cast as some kind of outsider, no matter how many great reset talking points he promotes, or podcasters like Joe Rogan apparently getting $250 million from the system to attack the system. Exactly right. The mainstream media, it's just changed faces.
Kit Knightley is great, and this is a great piece. And it's true. You know, they're creating, you know, they're going to lose this space, so they're creating a new place to, you know, it is the modified hangout gang. There's no doubt about it. So it's true.
They've created a new space. And don't underestimate how far down they go in terms of the messaging. You know, and
right. Here's the thing that's shocking. I mean, you have a whole world of people affirming a guy who wants to put a mesh network in the back of your head and hook you up to his satellites. And right. We're making him fashionable.
Right. But what I'm saying is there's an entire caste system. So the guy at the top is Musk, guys, Tucker Carlson, they're way at the top, Joe Rogan. But then there's layers beneath them. And at each layer beneath those layers, you'll see, oh, this popular guy and that popular girl, and they're having a debate where that debate is framed to goalpost the issues and define the range of permissible debate.
Right.
It's very extensive. I see it all the time on YouTube where I've been there 10 years.
So how do all of us avoid falling into that lane? How do we make sure we're outside that lane?
If you see something being pushed and there's no really good reason for it, like all of a sudden this commentator, this notion, this book, this podcast is being pushed, there's someone behind it, and you need to ask yourself why.
Right.
What's going on? And why is someone else who's got a message, they've got a compelling message, not being, like Danny Rancor. The point Danny Rancor makes about the virus, the alleged virus killing people, those deaths don't follow an organic pattern at all. They follow a jurisdictional and political pattern. That's a
quota system. That's a quota system.
That's a devastating point.
Right.
That's a definitive point. And who's talking about it? Do you see Brett Weinstein talking about it?
We're talking about it all the time.
Yeah, but I'm saying up to how do you recognize it?
Right.
Because up that ecosystem that I'm talking about, they're not going to talk about certain compelling topics.
Right. Right. I'm convinced there was a quota system in terms of deaths and well, essentially adverse events and deaths. In other words, you're looking at a quota system. Because if you look at the change in the patterns of all-cause mortality jurisdiction to jurisdiction, it's clearly being governed by jurisdiction.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep, exactly. Okay, let's back clean up with the best pushback probably of the year so far.
Happy Valentine's Day.
we're going to see a guy speaking to Rishi Sunak in the it's an audience participation.
He's a Scotsman, so get ready to adjust for a Scottish accent.
He's got a thick Scottish accent, but this is just dynamite. I'm not going to roll the whole clip; it's really long, but I'm going to roll another where you get to really.
Hi, Rishi Sunak. I've got so much to say, but such little time. My name is John Watt, and I'm one of the COVID vaccine injured in this country. I want you to look into my eyes, Rishi Sunak, and I want you to look at the pain, the trauma, and the regret I have in my eyes. We have been left with no help at all. Not only am I in here that's vaccine injured, there's another man over there whose life's been ruined by that COVID-19 vaccine. I know people who have lost legs, amputations. I know people with heart conditions like myself, Rishi Sunak. Why have I had to set up a support group in Scotland to look after the people that have been affected by that COVID-19 vaccine? Why are the people who are in charge, who told us all to do the right thing, have left us all to rot and left me and the thousands and the tens of thousands in this country to rot? Rishi Sunak, look me in the eye. When are you going to start to do the right thing? The vaccine damage payment scheme is not fit for purpose. In Scotland right now, according to the yellow card system, there are over 30,000 people that have had an adverse reaction to that vaccine. And
okay.
200 deaths.
John, thank you very much indeed for your question.
It's time for you to start doing the right thing, Mr. Rishi Sunak, and the rest.
You've made a really strong point, John. Prime Minister.
Yeah, John, well, I'm very sorry to hear about your personal circumstances, and you said someone over here also seems to have suffered by a similar thing. Now, obviously, I don't know about the individual situation that you're in.
We are silenced. We are the most silenced people in this country.
We're silenced right. In the press because my story in the press.
Okay.
I had to go to the government for comment, and they made
forgive me both.
So Sunak's going to sit there. He's going to defend the vaccine, and so is the host. They're going to defend the vaccine.
Sunak is still recommending that people take the vaccine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's not. So he's got his orders, and he's going to follow them.
Right. But one of the things I learned working in the federal government is you can kill with the pen. When you build budgets or regulations or rules in certain ways, you can engineer the death of millions of people. Sunak is ordering people, he is engineering people to be killed. He's recommending these injections knowing they kill people.
Yeah.
So he is intentionally poisoning a population, and he's using his position to do it, and he knows it. And now the people are beginning to realize he knows it, and he's killing.
And people are clapping for the guy standing up saying, when are you going to do the right thing? You told us to do the right thing, and then we did, and we get injured for it, and now you abandon us and suppress us. And Sunak, you notice Sunak's non-response is, I don't know the particulars of your circumstance. He just told you. Did you not hear that the guy just said? Anyway, these politicians are disgusting because all they are is pharmaceutical sales reps. They're just out there going to defend the vaccine no matter what. They're not listening to anybody. But notice that the crowd's getting closer.
I don't think they're pharmaceutical sales reps. I think they're central bank reps.
Okay. You know what I mean? These people right. are not independent. They're going to do whatever they're told to do, come hell or high water, even when the crowd, that crowd's within striking distance. What's to prevent that guy from coming across and breaking his Sunak's neck?
Sunak is murdering people. He's committing murder. And
yeah.
The crowd is starting to begin to realize that he is committing murder intentionally and knowingly and thinks it's fine because it builds his power and money. They are beginning to face an enemy and get clear that this is war and somebody's trying to kill him. Now, what I want to know is why did the media allow that event to happen?
It's a good question. My surmise would be the media is not there in such denial that they think it's perfectly okay that Sunak will just do his thing, he'll spread his magic fairy dust, and all will be okay. And it's like, you're playing with fire, guy. That guy was within striking distance.
Right. They are playing with fire. The day is going to come, as the savings diminishes, where a tipping point of 50% or more of the people in that audience realize they're looking at a guy who's trying to murder them.
Yeah.
Right.
We can take him out now.
Right. Right.
So they're closing in on Sunak. They're closing in on Biden. It's getting closer and closer. The press is turning on Biden. There's a shift underway big time.
Yes.
The pushback has hit a new threshold that we have not seen, you know, ever really.
Right. So I come back. This is why you want to be talking to your state and local leadership, because you're going to have to deal with this pushback at the state and local level. You're going to have to deal with it physically where you are. And it is absolutely imperative that you be prepared to deal with it in as responsible manner as possible. And that means talking to the leaders who are responsible and can do something about it.
Great advice. State level. Do something about it.
Please okay. Get to know your state representatives.
And your sheriff.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, let's turn to graphs, since we are now done with pushback. I love that. That Scotsman was great. I love that guy. Look me in the eye, Rishi Sunak. He was dynamite. But let's go to more pedestrian matters. Let's go back to that's the wallpaper known as the U.S. dollar index graph, okay?
Okay.
There you go.
Dollar rising. Great reset is working.
It's like a sinusoid. Just yeah. Up and down and up and down.
And part of it is, you know, market was down and things have been shaky and people are going to cash. And that's part of what drives the dollar up. But again, it puts, you know, everybody in a dollar bear trap is feeling the pain.
It spent a whole year over 100. Look at that.
Yep.
Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. There was 10 seconds back in July where it was below 100.
Okay.
Next up, we've got 30-year treasury, another kind of wallpapery.
So, So this is what's got people concerned. They were hoping for some relief from the Fed, but interest rates are rising, inflation is strong, and there's no reason. Now, the Fed set their target at 4%, but this is the 30-year treasury, and we're headed up above, you know, 4.5%. And that's painful again because you've got a lot of commercial real estate in pain. Now, one thing I will say is the savers are benefiting. So, you know, you can get 4 or 5% in a 12 to 18 month CD at most banks. And so savers are getting back in the game.
Yeah, I was in credit union the other day, and it's just consistent for a while. The highest yield is at 6 months. I don't get that.
You got a downward sloping yield curve.
I guess so.
Yeah.
It's like, why is 6 months the sweet spot? It's bizarre. Anyway, let's turn to the, I think it's the 10-year.
10-year. Looks pretty much the same. It's a little bit lower. It's upward sloping out after you get into the intermediate long.
Yeah, that's what you'd expect. The 10-year lower than the 30-year.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Then we got a couple more. Safety trade.
Okay, so I'm just looking. The top is, we're looking year-to-date at the S&P versus the bond aggregate ETF and gold and silver. And precious metals not off to a good start this year. And, of course, the worse silver gets, I just keep loving it and buying. So I find silver attractive. But the thing to note, again, about the S&P is it's being carried by the control grid. You've got the plunder stocks. And the big tech stocks doing well. And it's
we'll
a very ugly picture because you got a lot of very good productive companies that are, you know, they are, even though the market's up there they're in the doghouse.
So these are very traditional things, the aggregate, the gold and silver, right?
Right.
And the winning horse in this one looks like the S&P. Okay. Keep that in mind when we look at another graph, this one.
Right. So it looks like risk on. This is the S&P versus Bitcoin. From the time of the going direct reset vote on.
Yep.
And Bitcoin, you know, we get the pump and dumps and we're back into the pump.
Yeah.
So Bitcoin has done a very good job of keeping the retail money out of gold and silver.
Yeah.
So I would say that, you know, the Bitcoin strategy for the central bankers, it's been very successful.
Yeah, if that's what it is. I mean, I guess you'll never know until, you know, we'll see how Bitcoin plays out. But so far, so good, right? You can't argue with it.
So, John, you gave me some advice about this yesterday when we talked about it. You are part of the trance that you're watching is people thinking if they make enough money, they can be safe. And that's why I know that as the savings goes to zero, we're going to start to see real pushback.
Yeah.
But because they money makes them feel safe in a way that I can't compute, I can't understand. You know, they are doing really crazy things in terms of speculation to make money, or they're doing things that, you know, poison their neighbors to make money. So the amount of the economy that is doing speculative things or, you know, helping to poison or helping to build a control grid, you've got an entire economy. It's almost like they're running off the cliff, because over here is what's productive and over here is running off the cliff. And the worse things get, the more they run off the cliff. And so the successful strategy is don't run off the cliff. Start looking at what is truly productive and start heading in that direction, because that is the only direction where, you know, you have any chance of really making it.
Yeah.
And what's amazing is you would be shocked if I could put a GoPro camera on my shoulder and I could take John Titus with me and have the conversations I'm in. You would be shocked at how many people don't understand that they are on the menu.
Joe Biden's on the menu.
Everybody's on the menu, but you would not believe how many people think if they just play ball, they'll get the money and the money will protect them and they'll be okay and they're not on the menu. It's okay, shocking. So
here's what I want to know from you and what you just talked about. In other words, you may be making money, but the way the money is being made is really kind of seedy and criminal. I mean, when you get down, you get down to the nuts and bolts of it, it's not a pretty picture what those profits are resting on. So let's just cut to the chase and ask, would you be willing to make a lot of money by, say, shorting the health of people who took a vaccine and it's a killer vaccine unbeknownst to them? Are you comfortable making money doing that? That's a question you need to ask yourself.
I think most people are, as long as you can put a marketing package on it where they don't have to admit right. that openly. Right.
Right. Right. We're not really doing that. I don't think the penny has dropped from people who think, oh, as long as my bank account's big enough, I'm fine. No, you're not. There's no boundary on crime.
There's no, you know, so I'm going to say something untoward. When I was a kid growing up, we used to have conversations in both my mother's family and father's family. There was a real kind of alpha male competition about who'd done the best job of saving, you know, of contributing to civilization. So, you know, the message was, okay, your grandfather brought penicillin to Tennessee. What have you done today? Right?
Yeah.
Your father re-engineered all the emergency rooms in the United States, saving millions of life. What have you done today? Okay. Yeah. Nobody said, I made $1 million. What have you done today? In other words, if you had said, oh, well, I made money, then you were just a putz because you didn't understand where real power came from. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny, if you read Kennedy's book, American Values, you know, the conversation at their table was the same, even though both families, you know, both his mother's family and father's family were very wealthy. But it was about real assets, real things, real, you know, doing something real in the real world. And now, as you go across America, everything's about making money. And a lot of it is in poisoning or speculation. And so part of it is not just, I'm safe if I have a lot of money. Part of it is this notion, heroes make money. And what makes you a hero is you make a lot of money.
That money is virtue. That the more virtuous you are, the more money you make. And if you're making money, it's because you deserved it. You worked right. hard and you did it right and you played by the rules. That right. notion has been pushed for a long. The Horatio Alger myth or Ragnar, you just got to work hard and you get ahead. And the extreme wealth is just a benchmark for extreme virtue. That notion is pushed hard by the media.
There's a hero trance thing that we've got to break free of. I got to figure it out.
It's the daddy trance. So many people need a daddy. They need big daddy's going to come help them so they can justify sitting on their ass on their couch and doing nothing. Big daddy's going to save it us all. And it's just a bunch of nonsense.
I don't know. All I can tell you is we got to snap out of the trance.
Got to snap out of it. You need to snap out of it.
Right. Yeah. So anyway. I've been doing Wim Hof, so I'm in the pool house at one of my favorite allies places. And anyway, so I'm staying in the pool house, and every morning I jump into the pool. It's February, and it's cold. You know, there was snow all over my car, and I jumped in the pool. But you know something? It gets you out of the trance. Wim Hof, the Wim Hof method gets you out of the trance.
Heart attack can get you out of the trance. I can tell you what? That firsthand. Heart attack will snap you out of the trance instantaneously.
Okay, well, it's Valentine's Day. We want to warm your heart. Yeah. Okay, so let's go to Soleri. We're having a great week at Soleri.
Here you go.
So I have a quick presentation where I take three 1-minute videos that really bring home the issue of, you know, what happens if big tech and big banks get financial control through the transaction system. Anyway, so I wrote it up. Somebody was going to give it as a speech, and then the speech never happened, but I wrote it up and put it up on the website. So these are three 1-minute videos and a quick description of each one, and send it to everybody, because one of the things you see as you talk to people all over the country is they have great concern over many different issues, none of which are germane. If these guys get transaction control, they'll control everything. I'm always fighting with people who are fighting the mask or the vaccine mandates. Like, if they get transaction control, they can mandate everything.
I love your leadoff clip of Augustin Garcés.
Why? What do I say?
Well, it's the first clip. The first clip you have is from an IMF panel on October 2020. It's Augustin Garcés, the GM of the Bank for International Settlements. That's the one you know.
So I will never forget the moment that you and I saw that. You and I don't know if you remember this. You and I were watching it online together. We were chatting back and forth.
Yeah.
So I was in Europe and you were in the United States.
I remember.
And he said it. And either you or I forget which said, did he really just say that? Because that.
The hilarious part of it was that Powell then gets up and he's like trying to backpedal off of what.
He's scared. But that was the first time in my life. Because I remember I was raised and trained to be a central banker, right? And you're trained to talk pretzel talk so that other central bankers can understand what you're saying, but nobody else can understand. That is the first time I had ever in my life seen a central banker tell you the truth. It was the first time. I was floored. I couldn't even believe he said it. I had to watch it several times.
Yeah, it was incredible.
It was a great clip.
Let's keep it going. A lot of people don't get that clip. Why? Maybe it has something to do with mind control. What's going on here? Mind control.
So Michelle Stiles wrote a amazing book about soft mind control propaganda. It's been very popular with our subscribers. And Elsa von Helmlin is going to be doing a lot of interviews this year on mind control. And so she wanted to start with Michelle. And it's a great discussion of all the techniques. This book has been very, very helpful to many subscribers. So if you want to understand how propaganda works and how people around you are getting tricked, this can really help you.
That's awesome, because that's a real big subject and real germane subject.
Okay. Yes.
Next up, third quarter wrap up.
So when we did the AI revolution with Whitney Webb, we asked Jacob Nordegaard is coming out with a new book, and he had an introductory chapter that goes into the sort of governance structure that they want to use, you know, they're trying to say, oh, we're going to have AI run everything. And so the question is, how do you organize the governance structure and technocracy, you know, that they're going to use AI to give air cover to? So we said, can we publish that chapter? Because it takes a long time for his books to come out in English. So he let us use the Digital World Brain chapter, and so we just posted it for subscribers.
Awesome. Next up, my favorite thing. Look at this, the meet and greet.
Yeah, so we continue to, because it's a very dynamic schedule, we're putting it up on at the top of the website. You can click on it and sort of see the latest, and we're putting tentatives too as we sort of finalize plans. So if you want to see where I'm going to be and where you might, we give contacts. So if you want to contact the host, again, these are all organized by subscribers. We had a wonderful meeting with a group in outside of Franklin, Tennessee last Saturday, and then I'll be down in Huntsville, Alabama on Thursday evening. So I'm looking forward to that. Anyway, check out the schedule.
There's the one in Raleigh where I'm located is on Saturday, March 2nd from 7 to 10 o'clock. And I've got to remind myself, I got to get a hold of Terry and RSVP, but I'll be at that one for sure.
Okay. That's big stuff. John Titus will be there. So if you're anywhere near Raleigh, North Carolina, you want to come out.
Yeah, come on by.
Yeah. Okay.
I got to talk to Terry about where it is. Anyway, last in-house of the week is Hero of the Week, Joseph Mercola.
So Mercola and I have communicated more and more. I've read his website for years and love his website. It's very, very useful. He's dealt with massive suppression, and now, you know, articles don't stay up. So a lot of times when we republish his articles, we'll keep a copy of it because he can't keep them up. He keeps up only for a short period. But he's really rocking these days. He's got a new book coming out. He's also going to collect up all the sort of best of the Mercola since the beginning and republish that as a kind of curriculum. So I'm looking forward to those two products. But meantime, he's really rocking and pushing back hard. And he's one of those people who's decided, you know, you can go with reality or you can go with the official reality and there's no middle of the road. And he's just all in on reality. And anyway, so I've really enjoyed getting to know him better, and he's Hero of the Week.
Awesome.
He's really pushed back when Chase cut him and his business off. He really started to fight, and he's publicized it and done a great job of helping people understand what the danger is of banking with a bank like JP Morgan Chase. It's shocking to think that he and his team were in JP Morgan Chase. But it's part of getting out of the trance, right?
Yeah. We got to do our job and continue to push because it is shocking. And the fact that it's shocking means there's a big segment of the population that we're not yet reaching, and it's our duty to keep pushing ahead.
Right. Okay, John.
All right. Action-packed week. Happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah, next week I'll be in Pennsylvania. So I'll talk to you from Pennsylvania, okay?
All right, yes. See you then.
Happy Valentine's Day. Fill up the joy bucket. You're going to need it.
See you, Catherine.
Bye.